Now, I want to welcome our committee board chairperson, Dennis Amor, into the studio. Morning, Dennis.
Morning, Aaron.
So we're going to talk about rates, aren't we? Because that's what we've just been talking about off the air. And you've discovered that you have a rate rise of how much?
Well, in total, I've got a rate rise of 22.9%. So, yeah, it's a bit of a shock, seeing we were told we were going to have somewhere between 11 and 13.2, depending on how much the valuation of your property increased.
So we have to explain that that your house will have gone up in price, and it's gone up more than the average house in the district. So the average house in the district was going to get a rate rise of 11%.
11%. I think they said there was a cutoff of about 22% increase in valuation. Below that was 11, and above that was 13. But mine went up by 26%, my valuation, which I'm going to appeal when it comes out, because I'm not selling my house and I want to get my rates down a little bit. So it went up by 26%, but it doesn't explain why my total rates went up 22%. And it's actually worse, because they talk about the general rate going up 11 or 13%.
Yes, yep.
My actual general rate, when you take out the other things, went up 28%. So,
I did it.
Yes, it did.
And we should say also the other things are targeted rates, like the three water stuff.
Well, the other things, like your stormwater, like your food waste collection, and things like that.
Yeah,
and the library and things like that.
Roger Gallagher did a list, and there's about seven or eight of them.
They're on your rates bill. But, you know, even food waste went up 75 to 104 or something. So it's gone up 25%, which was something that I never expected. And for a lot of us, we actually don't even use it.
So there's all sorts of issues going on. And we were talking off the air about, you know, there's government-level issues with this, but the council can't do anything about that. You're a community board chairperson. Can you do anything about the rates, Dennis? Let's be upfront about.
Well, the reality, we can make a lot of noise, but whether it has any bearing, I don't know. I did a personal submission, which unfortunately I couldn't present at the time, but I did send my presentation to all the councillors and that sort of thing. But I think we've got beyond just looking at what we don't spend money on. I think we've got to reinvent the whole process of how we do business in council, and what is essential and what is not essential. Last year I got asked to do to comment on a roading review on some roads that were being reduced. They were looking at reducing in speed from 100k to 90k.
So in what capacity were you asked to do that?
I just got sent to us as chair of the community board.
Okay, yeah.
And there was sort of about, I can't remember exactly now, 8 or 10 roads in our area. Mangakino Road that I lived on for 40 years was one of those. It's about 1.2 kilometres along. It's a metal unsealed carriageway, a bit wider than one car width, and they were looking at reducing the speed limit on it from 100k to 90k. Well, now you tell me where there's any logic in that, because I probably never saw in 40 years of there, never saw a car do 90k up it anyway. And all the other roads, when I looked at, were similar type of roads.
So they
brought a consultant in to do that work. It was done by another consultant, and all credit to her, I know her. But she was given a contract to do a job. She did the job.
Yeah.
But where was the logic in even starting that job?
That's the disconnection that people working in council have with the area they're working with, because they're not living as part of it. So that's not really a personal criticism of the staff. It's just the reality that they don't know the area that they're looking after.
Well, I disagree. Sorry, Aaron, but the reality, we've got roading engineers. They're meant to travel the district and have a look at what's going on. One would have thought any roading engineer with a little bit of common sense would have said, no, hang on, what are we doing even bothering to put a road sign, speed sign on this road?
You have to be a rally driver to do 100k,
So all we're looking for is a little bit of common sense on things like that. And it was completely lacking in that case.
I find it so hard to really, like, if I'm really honest, I don't really know what it's like inside council. I know that something happened like a few years ago. I was telling Dennis, we've got a desk in the studio here, which we benefited from the council when they bought some new desks. But if you come and saw the desk in the studio, it's in perfectly good condition. We've had it for 10 years. They really didn't need to replace it.
That's right.
And that's 10 years ago, so we can't blame the current council for that. But but I feel like that is just it's just kind of a different concept. And I run an organisation that's run on the smell of an oily rag, so it kind of surprises me when I see things like that.
Yeah, and I think council's got to have a good look at all the soft things that go on too. You know, we've just been trying to do a bit of a strategic planning thing with council, and while I was in Australia, the guys had a bit of a session on it with someone from within council, and it got written up, and you know, the outcome of it was something that really we just said, well, this is. There's no direction in this. There's no goals in this, this and that sort of thing. And we just said it's not acceptable. And this is, I don't know how much of this goes on within council, but you see a little bit of it at our level. And you've got to think, well, there must be a hell of a lot more of it goes on, which is just purely wasting money.
The thing about cutting council services that worries me, I'm not against it because we probably could, but it's not a long-term solution. Like every 3 years, we're going to have an LTP, and we're going to, oh, we have to cut more services. Eventually, we're just left with no services at all. You know,
I understand that. But yeah. It's a matter of, it's probably not a matter of cutting services. It's a matter of sitting down with Waikato and Waipa and other councils in the area and say, what can we do together? Do we all need a sustainability group of five people or whatever that's costing each of us $1.5 to $2 million? Or can we have one sustainability person? We put 0.1 from each council. They work out of Hamilton City or they work out of Waipa or somewhere. And they provide advice to the whole area because it's the same advice going to everyone and they're probably coming to the same conclusions. So why have five?
Yeah, or if they can't get good staff, then they might not be getting the same advice, which is also a problem as well. Yeah. Like we've seen with Watercare, the benefit of Watercare working for our council is they've got some expertise that you couldn't get otherwise.
That's right, and they can call upon expertise from Auckland when they have issues and things like that. And
actually, that might be a model going forward, like because Watercare is going to pull out in a couple of years,
yep.
And all our councils in the area, I think the Mayor said they're already talking about what they're going to do about that. So to do their three water services, because that's a whole other issue about having that dumped back on ratepayers as well. But a practical solution for that I think they're working on is all the councils working together to form their own council-controlled organisation, which will mimic what Watercare did, hopefully.
Yeah, you know, and I said the other day to someone, is you know, with sewerage and things like that, they were talking about Tamahere when we did our walk around up at the up here, and I was talking to Mike Kerr about Tamahere. And
he's the councillor from Tamahere.
Yeah, they were having to do something out there. And I said, well, why bother doing anything, Mike? Why don't you just come up with a contract agreement with Hamilton and pump it all through to Pukete? You're on the opposite side of everyone else. Why have an isolated system? Just put it into the Hamilton system and pay them have a targeted rate or pay them have a contract with them. Yeah. And you could do the same for Narrawahia, Taupri, all those. They could all be pumped through to Hamilton.
Well, they are. Tamahere especially is Hamilton.
Yeah, it's on it that.
If you live there, you say you're from Hamilton, right?
You're not from Narrawahia, no.
Yeah, no, well, Waikato District Council,
So there's a whole lot of smarts, I think, and the new CEO's got to start thinking about these sorts of things. And
this is the new CEO we don't have yet?
The one we don't have.
Okay.
Hopefully there's enough brains in the organisation to make sure we appoint the right sort of guy.
Another issue that concerns me is with staff. I looked at an issue of, or the overturn of staff. I looked at the issue of where that water's, the inlet has been eaten away near the boat ramp at Papahua, so between the walk bridge and the boat ramp.
Oh, yeah.
It's been eaten away. So over 10 years ago, there were experts like Shaw Mead was trying to alert both our councils to the fact that there was going to be a problem there, that it would get eaten away when we got the new bridge. And I've seen John Lawson gave me a list of all the different attempts to communicate with council over the last decade, and every couple of years they would try it, and they'd start, something would start, and then a staff member would leave, or in one case, a staff member died, which was really unfortunate. So, you know, you can't stop your staff from dying. Or maybe you can, maybe you're working them too hard, I don't know. You don't think that's very likely, Dennis. But anyway, this high turnover, which means you're always starting from scratch, and people coming in completely ignorant of what's gone on before them. I mean, can we try and make it a good place to work so people don't actually want to leave all the time? That could be another option.
Yeah. I know we have talked about that in the past about turnover of staff at council, and that sort of thing. And it, On the surface, it seems high, but I don't know what the numbers are and what the comparisons are with other councils.
But it was just that thing of, for 10 years, a lot of effort was made and literally nothing came from it.
So. Yeah, and we did have a talk and a meeting on that last year, and I've got to admit, off the top of my head, I can't really think where the hell they got to. But looking at some sort of groin or something out from the wall.
That specific issue,
From the bridge, at least, to stop that erosion on that, I guess it's on the western side of the footbridge.
Yeah, so that's a specific thing that we're going to have to spend money on.
Yeah.
Or lose, get deep into the road. Okay, so that's your personal thing with the rates. You're going to be doing that. That'll be interesting to see as an example. I imagine other people will be as well.
Yeah, well, I had a look at some other properties in the same street as I'm in, and they're all sort of significant numbers and increases. But I did have a look at a couple of other properties, and there are in the sort of closer to the centre of town and that sort of thing, and they have only gone up 30-odd%. So all I'd say to people is if you want to see what your rates increase is going to be and what your change in evaluation is, you can go online to Waikato District, just stick in Waikato District Council rates,
yep.
And it'll come up with a whole lot of tabs, and you can just pick up your rate calculation from that and go online, stick in your address, and you'll be able to work out what your rate increases.
Mm. The only concern for you is that if all your neighbours have gone up similarly, then it probably means they've actually done an accurate job.
Well, the problem is that there was a house up the road from us, or right next door to us, sold for $2.2 million. You know, 18 months, a couple of years ago now.
Yeah.
And while valuations haven't gone up, they've probably come back. I think a lot of the rating has been done on properties like that.
Well, there's a house.
They use the market rates of what the houses sell for to set the valuations. And in reality, I think Raglan's probably come back a little bit from those days.
There is a house down that way that I know Ray White's been trying very hard to sell. Including getting articles and stuff.co.nz, and they haven't been able to. So,
It's sitting on the corner of Nihini Avenue.
It's a different market now, I think.
Yeah, and they're looking for 1.9 for it.
Yeah,
And that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's a different market. You're right.
So you and I were on a tour of the wastewater works, the sewer tour on Thursday. Was it? Did you learn anything new, Dennis?
Well, no, I guess, to a certain extent, we got an understanding of what the new plant...
Get a feel for it in
some ways. ..and what the NBR plant's going to be,
and
that sort of thing, and what the program is for that. And that looks really promising for the community. Once that is up and running, it'll certainly improve things. And the good thing about it was that it has got the capacity to do it about... two and a half times what the population is at the present time.
At least double. So and that I really wanted to know if that was the case, so that I was asking that question.
So once I've got that up and running, and I think, what were they talking about, July next year?
June they were saying.
June next year, So, you know, we're only sort of looking 12 months away, and we'll have the MBI plant actually up running and in service.
And folks, if this is the first you've heard about this, what it will do is make the water so clean that you can wash your hands in it. And in actual fact, I might have been in the car with one of the guys from Watercare, but he said that if they took that wastewater, it's not wastewater anymore, that treated wastewater, and they chlorinated it, actually would be fit for human consumption at that point.
Right,
so that's very clean.
Yeah, it's pretty clear. It's just a matter of getting over the psychological issue of where it's come from as to what you do with it. But lots of other places in the world actually treat their water and that sort of thing. And
I mean, we wouldn't do it here because we've got this beautiful spring water, which we also saw feeding the town. So, and that really was a beautiful little spot where they have
Ricky Springs, which has sort of been providing Raglan with its water. Well, virtually since the water reticulation came into being in Raglan.
Yeah.
There was a bore down behind the old Scout Hall that used to supply, back in the 1950s, some of the central business area.
That was still... you could still get water out of it in the early 2000s, but I don't think it's there anymore.
Yeah, it's still there. We had a leak in it 12 months ago that I had to get them.
Okay.
I got a phone call to say that it was leaking above ground, and we had to get the pipe recapped. And that sort of thing. But the spring is still there.
Okay.
Yeah, but, Ricky Springs, after they took that out of service and reticulated the whole town, Ricky Springs has been basically supplying the water to the town ever since then.
Mm-hmm.
And seems to have the capacity to go on doing that from what Matthew was saying when we talked to him.
What did he say about that?
When I asked him whether we're at the maximum capacity of that spring, because yeah. I had been led to believe we were getting close to it, and his comment was, no, there's still plenty of water there. Whether they, I think they're close to the resource consent of how much they're allowed to
right.
take.
Yes, that's a different, which is a different issue. I mean, there's a yeah. whole mountain full of water feeding that spring. So
yeah, yeah that's yeah. right. And we saw it all running down the river below the spring, you know, below where the water treatment plant is.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, all right. So that was the thing we did. The wharf, I haven't talked to you since the wharf opening. You were heavily involved with getting that project going. Or not, no, not getting it going, but keeping it going. Is everything finished, or there's still some trees to come in, or...?
There's some signage to go up, but that's not part of the wharf project. That's an individual... That's part of the Parks and Reserves guys have got to do that about no fishing.
Okay.
And I haven't checked to see if they're there or not, but I will do because some people have called me on that. But my understanding, there was a little bit of roading stuff to be tidied up, but basically I would imagine by now most of it's done.
Okay. And what's the reaction been to that now that it's finished and people can experience it?
All the feedback I've had is very, very positive. About you know how much more open it is down there, that it's safer. People feel safer when they're walking around down there yeah. and things like that. I've been very, very positive, the feedback that we've got.
Okay, and we should just always take the opportunity to remind people it was paid for by the government, not by their rates.
I think council did a very good job on that, and the project managers that were involved in it did a very good job on that,
yeah.
and coordinating with all the stakeholders in the area and all the people... And basically keeping the wharf open during all that period so people still had access to the wharf.
Especially through the summer break.
Yeah, with minimal inconvenience, and also thanks to everyone that actually went out of the way to help them.
Mm. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we had fun with power, fun without electricity for a few days here in town. Were you here the power cut for a couple of days? Were you here then?
Yes, I was here.
I thought you might have been. I know you've been working away at times, but...
No, I was here. The power went off and wife and I looked at each other and found some stuff in the fridge to eat and then we went to bed.
Woke up the next morning
it was still off and then we thought, okay, so now we're... And that sort of thing. But, there's been mixed sort of comments on it. You know, some people have made the noise about why wasn't a civil emergency declared and things like that, but... I think the reality is that, you know, there was no life and limb was at risk or anything like that.
And isn't that one of the requirements, that life's at risk?
It is one of the things that is a requirement before you move down that route. And I've got to say that Well did a very good job of getting emergency generation in within about 14 hours. We had medical centre back online. We had the Trussell Hospital back online.
I don't know, it happened in the middle of the night because we're by the hospital and I woke up and the power was on. So
you thought the problem, you see, yeah, you thought the problem was over until you came to work.
Yeah, yeah. I did. I couldn't work out why the things weren't working here in the radio station. But because I could also see the lights on down the end of Bow Street where they also had power because on the same circuit as Raglan Medical.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, but there were a lot of people, there was actually a bit of, people found it different and seemed to be enjoying the novelty of it. Some people. Other people were worried. I talked to a lady outside the town hall here who'd come down to town because she had no power, no internet, no heating, anything. She didn't know what was going on. And she had no radio either.
Okay.
So she was like completely blind. So she came downtown hoping that something somewhere would tell her what was going on. And it was almost like back in the day, pre-electricity days, where you had to come and find the town notice board was where she was at. So with our massive levels of technology now, we get thrown back into the dark ages a lot quicker.
Yeah.
And when it goes wrong, it goes very wrong.
Yeah, I struggle with that a little bit because, you know, like my wife and I are not that tech savvy. We survive that sort of thing. But there was enough information that she could see on Facebook what was going on. And things like that, and that the power outage was on and, well, we're investigating it and things like that. And if you wanted more, you could ring Well. You got a pretty standard answer out of them, but because they didn't know when it was coming back on, and that was probably one of the biggest issues that Well weren't actually saying that we can't find this fault, this could be a longer outage than we're planning.
Yeah, I only heard that through the council comms department, John Brown, the head of comms there, which was actually really helpful of him just to slip that piece of information.
Yeah, they should have. That information would have helped council, it would have helped water care and things like that with the emergency generation they've got on for their pumping stations and things like that, because they would have... like Matthew said to us at the community board meeting last Wednesday, if they'd known that, they would have probably taken a different view to putting more permanent generation out here for the pumping stations. So this whereas is, they were just sort of carting a generator from one to the other as required.
So this is Matthew Telfer, who's the water care guy.
Manager for water care.
Manager for water care. And so they were early on the process, they were just told, a couple of hours, it's going to be a couple of hours, and they kept getting told that. And eventually they found out that actually no one knew where the fault was and there was no timeline.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. So how do you think they handled that situation? Because we did have three little spills, and they were little compared to stuff we've had in the past.
I think the reality is when you talk to the guys in the Mount Effort, we went in, they did extremely well.
Yeah.
Because the reality is, we've still got sewage flowing into our pumping stations. Our pumping stations have still got to be able to pump into the wastewater system, and that sort of thing. And if there's no power, once they get a high alarm, which all the remotes still work, so then they could still monitor the system.
Yeah.
They were basically taking generation around from pumping station to pumping station and running the pumping stations all but manually, really, to pump the sewage back out to the wastewater system.
And I think they said they pumped some stuff out of the little pumping stations and delivered it to the big pumping stations.
Big ones, and then got the big ones, because two of the big ones, I think, have semi-permanent, or they have their own backup supplies, from what I can gather.
Yeah, and I did ask them the question, because some people were saying, why don't we have generators in all of those pump stations? And the question that comes back is, like, how much rates do you want to pay? Because not only do you have to buy the generators, but then they have to be maintained. And that's quite a big program in reality, I guess monthly checks or something like that.
Yeah, well, you'd have to run them monthly, just make sure that they go when you want them in emergency, and then how often do you really need them in an emergency?
Well, that was a pretty... That length of power outage was a pretty rare event.
Yeah, it'd be a very rare event. You know, we have outages that might go overnight, until they get the line reinstated or pole reinstated and things like that. But generally speaking, 12 hours is probably max.
Having said that, it's a rare event. We had this rare event. Last year we had the rare event of State Highway 23 being closed. Before that we had a 1-in-100-year virus turn up. Like in the last 5 years, that's three very rare events.
Yeah, but we go back there, we've had cyclones before that and problems
things keep happening.
You can sort of create one every 3 or 4 or 5 years if you go back over history.
Yeah. So on that subject, the civil defence, there was a meeting last year about civil defence and getting a community plan. I hear things have been happening in the background, but where's that at?
Where is it at? We've got a draft document prepared. We need to do a bit more work on that document. We need to talk and just confirm with the organisations that have been named in that document, that they are happy to take on the roles that we'll be asked them to take on, which is mainly around being an emergency shelter or something like that. And then it's a matter of basically putting a committee putting a civil defence team together locally that would respond in the appropriate case. So it's actually sitting with myself and Lisa probably at the moment to move that on to the next stage.
Yeah.
We've circulated the draft document to the community board members for comment. It's basically sitting with us to move it to the next stage, probably have another meeting with all interested parties and just try and lock some people into roles that they might want to fill within that team.
Like, I know where to be the broadcaster for a civil defence emergency.
Yeah, you'd probably get landed with that.
Yeah, well, it seems fairly obvious. But then I'm like, okay, if I'm doing that, who's supplying me with information to tell people? Like, how's that bit going to work?
Yeah, well, there would be a sort of team leader, civil defence, local team leader who would work in conjunction with Narrawaia.
Yeah.
Then there'd be a team under that's looking after logistics, iwi, transport, logistics, communications. I think there's about seven areas we identified under that we need sort of team leaders for that can respond to those.
Okay.
So that, you know, if the emergency was in a certain area, they could then direct people and make sure a shelter's available and it's got food and it's got, electricity and everything in a certain area.
Okay. Manu Bay breakwall. I've heard there might have been something constructive happen in the last couple of months.
Yeah, there's a meeting of stakeholders. There's stakeholders planned for July. So that's the notices have gone out that there'll be a meeting of various stakeholders in July. There are some options that have now been put on the table, circulated okay. to those stakeholders,
yeah.
And that sort of thing to have a look at. And that's what their discussion will be, is to try and find a way forward at that point.
So we could be, according to an estimate from council staff when they were going through the annual plan process, could be $2 million spent resolving that, potentially?
I don't know.
You don't know? Okay, all right.
I wouldn't hazard a guess at this stage.
That was like before they changed to what they called the enhanced annual plan, and it was where staff had put all their, here's what we'd like if we can afford it.
There were some dollars put in way back then. I don't know whether that's still in the enhanced annual plan,
yep.
which, by the way, I believe is getting ratified or approved at this Wednesday at council meeting.
Well, it has to be officially in place by the 1st of the next month, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Sound Splash, the community board seems intent on getting lots of money out of Sound Splash. How much do you think at this point?
Well,
for hiring the reserve.
All we're saying that, you know, at the end of the day, it should be fair market rates compared with other festivals around the countryside
okay.
and things like that. So we did ask council to go back and have a review. They've done a review. They've come up with some options of what festival organisers pay in other areas.
Yeah,
it's quite difficult, in all fairness to the council guys, to try and get something that sort of aligns with a little bit with Sound Splash and the numbers.
So you're comparing apples with apples.
To make sure you are.
Yeah.
So, but we're not far away, but it will be an increase on what we're getting with the aim that all that money will go back into developing the reserve and things
right.
like that.
Okay. And just before we go, last October there was a very high E. coli reading in the harbour just near the museum. And Matthew Telfair from Watercare was basically saying they investigated it. There weren't any improper pipes in the system, but we still don't know what caused that. Do you think we'll actually ever find out?
Well, the reality is they've done checks of the big pipes, and the pipe that I raised with concern that comes out of the bottom of Stewart Street. And it's there, and they've checked that there's no ingress into that of sewage or anything like that. That pipe, that drainage system, does collect a lot of road effluent and things like that. So whether it's related to animal droppings and various things like that, which seem to be prevalent around town, I don't know. But, yeah, you're probably right. We possibly won't be able to actually ascertain that other than doing continual checks and just monitoring whether it stays like that all the time or it's a one-off.
Yeah, okay. All right, it's time for us to wrap up. Is there anything else you have been working on or doing that you want to mention to people?
No, there's only really the Weirnera Walkway, which is developing. That should be all finished in July. So that should be open in July. And the other one that's starting to move ahead is the natural playground at Greenslade Road. There was a referendum or vote done on by the local people on whether they want a normal playground,
yes.
which what we're used to, or a natural playground made out of logs and rocks and things, and they've gone the natural way. So there's some design work being done on that, and that'll move forward over the next few months.
Okay, so that's basically in process. It'll happen.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. All right, Dennis, thank you for coming in.